Down through the centuries and right to this day, there have been Christians and indeed churches who are only too happy to tell you what the Bible says. But when you need a helping hand, they're nowhere to be found. Hi, I'm Bernie Diamond and welcome to A Different Perspective. I'd like to share a story with you today. Now, I don't know who wrote it. I don't know where it came from. It's a parable about the church. It moved me incredibly deeply when I first stumbled across it. So please let me share it with you now. On a dangerous seacoast where shipwrecks often occur, there was once a crude little life-saving station. The building was just a hut, and there was only one boat, but the few devoted members kept a constant watch over the sea and with no thought of themselves went out day and night tirelessly searching for the lost. Many lives were saved by this wonderful little life station, so it became famous. Some of those who were saved and various others in the surrounding area, they wanted to become associated with the station and give some of their time and money and effort for the support of its work. New boats were purchased, new crews were trained. This little life-saving station grew. Some of the members of the life-saving station were unhappy that the building was so crude and poorly equipped. They felt that a more comfortable place should be provided as the first refuge of those saved from the sea. So they replaced the emergency cots with beds and they put better furniture in the enlarged building. Now, the life-saving station became a popular gathering place for the members. They decorated it beautifully and furnished it exquisitely because they used it as a sort of a club. Fewer members were now interested in going to sea, and so they hired lifeboat crews to do the work. The life-saving motif still prevailed in the club's decoration, and there was a liturgical lifeboat in the room where the club's medallions were held. About this time, there was a large shipwreck off the coast and the hired crews brought in boatloads of cold, wet and half-drowned people. They were dirty and sick and some of them had black skin and some of them had yellow skin. The beautiful new clubhouse was a mess. So the property committee met and immediately had a smaller house built alongside the club where the victims of the shipwreck could be cleaned up before coming inside. At the next meeting, there was a split in the club membership. Most of the members wanted to stop the club's life-saving activities because they were unpleasant and a hindrance to the normal social life of the club. Some members insisted on life-saving as the club's primary purpose and pointed out that they were still called a life-saving station. But they were finally voted down and told that if they wanted to save lives of all those various people who were being shipwrecked in the waters, they could begin their own life-saving station down the road. So they did. As the years went by, the new life-saving station experienced the same changes that had occurred in the old one. It evolved into a club, and yet another life-saving station was founded. History repeated itself again and again and again. And if you visit that coastline today, you'll find a string of exclusive clubs along the shore. Shipwrecks remain frequent in those waters, but today, most of the people drown. It's a powerful story, isn't it? And the reason it moved me so deeply is this. I realized how easy it is to be one of those people who turns the life-saving station into a club for its members. I realized how perhaps I'd carried some of those attitude around in my head and my heart and in my behavior over the years. The first little church I ever wandered into was called the Oyster Bay Community Church, probably no more than 50 members in a sleepy, leafy little suburb of Sydney. I caught up with my good friend Pastor Phil not so long ago. Phil's one of the giants in my life. Now, let me describe this place to you. It's a tiny little church building with that distinctive 1960s church architecture. A handful of people in the service when I wandered in for the first time on a Sunday morning a decade and a half ago. Nothing impressive to the eye. But when I wandered in, I'd been through some terrible pain in my life. I was hurting behind my confident businessman's facade. And without knowing it, in this unimpressive little place, this handful of apparently unremarkable, imperfect people, they were the life-saving station that refused to become a club. They would take the cold and the wet and the injured and do for them whatever needed doing to bring them back to health again. Without ever realizing it, I wandered into this little life-saving station, and God used the people in that place to save my life, literally. And not only that, but from that time onwards, I came to the conclusion that whoever I was and whatever I did had to be about saving lives. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing right now. Jesus said to his disciples, "I came that you may have life in all its abundance." He came to bring life, life here, life now, in a deep, intimate relationship with him, life eternal, exactly the same way. Over the past few weeks, we've been exploring this question, what should we be looking for in a church? And here's the thing. I believe that unless a church is telling people outside of itself about Jesus, about this Jesus who came to bring them abundant life, unless we're serious about building new friendships and new relationships with people who don't yet know Jesus, we're not a life-saving station. We've become a club. To be sure, we have to care for our own. To be sure, we have to encourage them and build them up in their relationship with Jesus. But what sort of a church are we, let me ask you, if we're not prepared to go out there where people live, where people are dying, my friend, and share our Jesus with them? Now, I've seen churches implement evangelism programs. In a sense, I dislike and distrust the word evangelism. It has baggage. It smacks of a program to win souls. It smacks of projects and programs and notches on the belt. I'm not sure that's necessarily what Jesus had in mind when he called us to be fishers of men and of women. I see churches with pithy signs hung outside their buildings as part of their evangelism program. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking churches and people for the sake of knocking them. I just remember back not that many years ago, I have to tell you, when I hadn't yet met Jesus somewhere along my road. Now, I can't use the language right now that I used to use about you Christians back then here on the air because they'd throw me off. But suffice to say, you Christians didn't have a whole bunch of credibility with me. I wasn't ready to listen to you Christians and what you had to say because, well, I just didn't think you lot did such a good job at running your own lives. But one day I was in need. Difficult times for the successful, confident, I'm going places businessman. And here's the thing, these Christians, people who had one thing in common, I despised them all. Christians came out of the woodwork and met my needs quietly, unassumingly, sacrificially. I look back on it now and I realize that I wasn't such an easy person to help. It wasn't pleasant work for them. But these were people who understood that they weren't club members. They were lifesavers. And the way you save a life is by doing what needs to be done. The experts call it need-oriented evangelism. I call it common sense. I call it precious love. I call it being Jesus to the lost and to the dying. I'll never forget what they did for me. And in their doing, in their practical, need-oriented love, I discovered all of a sudden that my heart was open. And that's when Jesus walked in. If there's one thing I look for in a church, it's those sorts of people. Not club managers, lifesavers. The amazing thing, when you and I are flourishing in the house of the Lord, there's something special that happens. We bear fruit, and that fruit brings life to the other people. We can't help being lifesavers. What people want is for us to meet their needs. What they want, even though they perhaps don't quite realize it, is for us to earn the credibility, the right to tell them about the loving God who sent his son Jesus to die for them by first loving them the way they need to be loved. When you think about it, that kind of makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Now, don't forget, there are more than 20 messages in these recent series about church, and they're available right now online at christianityworks.com. So please stop by, check it out, christianityworks.com. I'm Bernie Diamond, and you've been listening to A Different Perspective. Catch you again soon.